everything you got. Play fast, play hard. Let's beat these boys tonight in their house.
It's party time. It's party time.
Dad, here we go.
Touchdown! You are listening to the Eagle Eye in the Sky podcast. Now here's your host, Brand Duffy.
That's right. Another week, and the playoffs are officially here as the Eagle Eye in the Sky podcast continues. I'm Fran Duffy, and as always, I think we've got a great show for you here on episode number 127. At the top of this week's show, we've got Chalk Talk, where I chat with Greg Cosell from NFL Films to help me provide you with the most in-depth breakdown of this Saturday's playoff matchup against the Atlanta Falcons that you'll find anywhere. We'll follow that up with our scouting report, where this week we're going to break down one of the top players in this week's college football national championship game. But before we get into all that, let's not waste any more time. Greg Cosell and I dive into this Eagles-Falcons matchup on both sides of the ball. What is most important to follow in this game that's going to lead to an Eagles victory? Let's get to that chat now in Chalk Talk.
Let's get down to business. It's time for Chalk Talk.
All right, Greg, let's get into this. It's obviously a huge matchup here with the Eagles and the Atlanta Falcons divisional round. It's going to happen Saturday night here at Lincoln Financial Field. Let's dive deep into this matchup. And really, you've been watching the Falcons all season long. I've been doing a kind of a cram session over the last week and change. Last week, part-time, you know, preparing for a potential matchup. And then Monday, my entire day was watching Atlanta on both sides of the ball. Let's start with the Eagles offense matched up against this Atlanta defense. And I got to tell you, I was really impressed by this Atlanta defense in a lot of different ways. It's a fast, really competitive, aggressive unit, which, you know, obviously has its advantages and its negatives. But when you watch them, it's an athletic group Yep. that flies to the football.
Yeah, and they start the foundation of what they do is single high safety. They play single high safety coverages on the back end, predominantly cover three. They've really morphed over the last 3 weeks or a month, Fran, to play a lot more cover three than cover one, because earlier in the season they were playing a lot more cover one. But now they've played a lot more cover three, and their last three, four games they've played really, really well. Quarterbacks have had a very difficult time throwing the ball against this defense. They're only completing about 55% of their passes over the last 3 weeks against this defense. So this defense has played well on the back end. Now, that also leads to the pass rush. Yep. It's a very fast, aggressive pass rush, predominant four-man pressures. They're not a big blitz team. So when they go to their nickel, the edge rushers are almost always Vic Beasley on one side and the rookie Tack McKinley on Yep. the other side. They're both aggressive players. Beasley is a very good athlete. McKinley at this point is just a bundle of energy without a lot of moves.
Nonstop.
But he will get after it pretty good. They're two nickel linebackers, and a lot of people don't talk about them. They're as good a nickel linebacking duo as there is maybe left in the playoffs. It's Devondre Campbell, who you and I both really liked coming out of the University of Minnesota, 6'4", about 235 pounds, a very athletic player. And then Deion Jones, who when they're lined up stacked, Deion Jones looks like his little brother, because Deion Jones is about 6 feet, 220 pounds.
Jones is a great player.
But he's a really good player. And so their nickel defense is a really, really difficult defense to go up against.
And facing the L.A. Rams last week, 11 personnel.
Which is what all the Rams basically yeah. line up in.
So it was nickel all day for Correct. The Atlanta Falcons on defense. Let's start and kind of look at this from a matchup to
Sure.
matchup perspective. So, you know, you talk about Nick Foles, and this is going to be the, you know, the matchup that I think is in everyone's focus and everyone's crosshairs this week is what he's going to face. You talked about the single high coverages from the Atlanta Falcons. So you see cover three, you see cover one, you see some two-man, especially on third down. From a personnel standpoint, though, and a Desmond Trufant and a Robert Alford, and inside in the slot you have Brian Poole, who I think is one of the best slot corners.
Yeah, he's played really well the last 2 years, and he came out of nowhere.
Yeah, he was a seventh-round pick, I want to say, from Florida. Tell us about the personality of those corners on the outside, because probably the best corner duo I think the Eagles have faced all year, probably right there to me with what you saw in Denver with Tlaib and Chris Harris.
Yeah, I mean, I really like them as players. You know, Trufant, he's the guy that people talk about because he was a high pick. I think he was initially a first-round pick, if I'm not mistaken.
Yep.
But and Alford was a small school guy who
Southeast Louisiana.
I remember when he came out, there were a lot of people who really liked him. He may have been a second-round pick.
I believe so.
And I think they might have come out in the same year.
That you might be right about that.
Yeah, yeah. They're both probably a little shorter than you'd ideally like, but they're very aggressive players. They're quick players. Keep in mind that even when you're playing the zone version of single high, which is cover three, when you're playing outside the numbers, it's really man-to-man. So then it just becomes what technique the corner is playing, but it really becomes man-to-man coverage outside the numbers. And these guys, they're aggressive. I think they drive on the football really, really well, which is absolutely necessary when you play cover three, because normally in cover three you're not playing press.
Right.
You're playing with a cushion. You're playing off coverage. From a personality standpoint, they're very competitive. They're very aggressive. Again, you hear this all the time, but I think it holds true for those guys, is that they play with amnesia. So if they do get beat here and there, that doesn't impact the way they go about playing the next play. It's a tough duo to go up against. And you mentioned the slot corner. There's a guy, when he started last year, week one, a lot of people didn't know who Brian Poole was. And I'll count myself in that category as well. And I thought he played really well last year. Now, look, I think they play out of their nickel because they're not – they play very little dime.
Yeah.
So they play nickel. I think I looked at the stats, and they play nickel something like 72 or 73% of their snaps. So Brian Poole is on the field on three-quarters of the Falcons' defensive snaps.
Yeah, he's – I mean, all three of those guys, they're quick. They're tough. You mentioned the competitiveness. Little handsy. They'll play through the route. Snap the whistle. They're going.
If it's not called, it's fine.
And it's one of those things, too. Ben Fennell brought up a good point when we were watching. If you hold on every play, they're not going to throw on every play.
They're very aggressive
very
and competitive.
Much so. Yeah, it's a really, really tough competitive group. So, you know, watching them match up against an Alshon Jeffrey and Torrey Smith and Nelson Agholor, that's one of the best one-on-one matchups in this game is Nelson versus Brian Poole. Two guys that are very quick, very sudden, in and out of cuts. It's going to be fun to watch those guys match up.
Well, it'll be interesting, too, how much man they do play.
Yeah.
Obviously, they're single high safety based, but on third down, they will play some two-man.
Yep.
Now, two-man is interesting because it's a whole different way you can play man coverage because you have the two safeties over the top, so you don't necessarily – you know, you can play more of that sort of tailgating, undercutting defense where you can almost let receivers get over the top of you and undercut them. So it's a different technique.
Yeah, which is what makes those throws for the quarterback
harder,
all the more difficult.
Yes.
No question. They don't travel. You know, and Desmond, do you think that it'll be a situation where Desmond Trufant's going to follow an Alshon?
I don't think so.
Yeah,
now,
I don't think so.
Could be wrong. He's done that at times, but that's not their normal MO because their foundational coverage is zone. Normally when a team's foundational coverage is zone, Fran, and you know this, they don't travel corners.
Yeah.
But they've done it on occasion, but I would think not this week.
Let's talk about the safeties because, you know, the corner is obviously very talented. Ricardo Allen is a former corner. I think he was coming out of the Citadel. But the strong safety, Keanu Neal, is a guy who, to me, really, really impressed me on film. I loved him at Florida, a guy who matches up on the tight ends at times when they go 3-by-1. So he'll play a little bit of man, plays down the box, big hitter, really instinctive, tough safety.
No, I agree. I mean, he fits what they do because, as we said, they're foundational, single high. So he's the safety in the box. He predominantly plays there. At times he'll be deep and Allen will move into the box, but predominantly it's Keanu Neal. Now, when they play cover one, he will match up to the tight end.
Mm.
If they play two-man, he'll be deep, and Devondre Campbell will match up to the tight end. And Campbell can play tight ends.
Yeah.
He's very, very athletic, and he's long. So they feel very comfortable with their tight end matchups when they play man-to-man.
Do you think that it would be advantageous for the Eagles to go with heavier personnel groupings in this game? Are those matchups where, you know, let's say you kind of force them to stay in base, you know, now you're bringing on Duke Riley, a rookie linebacker from LSU,
but another small
super
player,
athletic kid, but he's undersized.
Yeah, yeah. Because what they, you know, what they'll do, I mean, they do two things. Now that Riley's healthy, he's probably the guy. But when he was not playing, Vic Beasley ended up playing sort of strong side linebacker in their 4-3.
Yep.
I don't know if they want him there.
Probably not.
But then you get, you know, if they go 4-3, if the Eagles go with two tight ends, then you're going to get Devondre Campbell, who'll probably be the strong linebacker playing on the ball on the line of scrimmage, and their two stack backers will be Riley and Jones, who are both light.
Yep.
So there's definitely going to be an argument to be made that you want them in their base and you want to run the ball. Now, I took a look at a ton of Eagles running plays last week because I wanted to get a real feel for how the Eagles run the ball. And as you know, there's always tendencies and there's always concepts with specific players.
Of course.
And I found it very interesting. In looking at Blunt, there was a – he's the guy who did the wham and the trap.
Yep.
And the inside zone because he's a down – he's a straight line linear runner.
Which will be a factor in this game in
right.
terms of the traps and the whams.
Right.
So against this scheme, you would think that they're going to try and prey on that aggressiveness.
Right. Although what was interesting is the Rams tried that a couple of times
and
it did not go well
because
it was Dontari Poe on one of them, I believe, and he just read it immediately and he won. But just getting back to the Eagles run game, those are the runs I saw with Blunt. Then for Ajayi and Clement, you saw a lot more outside stuff. You saw a lot more outside zone. You saw a lot more with pulling linemen to the perimeter. So the Eagles have a definite run game approach to depending on the backs. And now it comes down to execution because the Falcons will know that from film study.
Sure. And I think it'll be interesting as we transition now into this run game. Jay Ajayi, no running back in the NFL, ran for more yardage in the Falcons this year than Ajayi did when he was with the Dolphins. It was 136 yards,
right.
I think, in that game back early in the season. You know, coming off fresh, didn't play week 17, was inactive for that game. I'll be very, very intrigued to see how he's used in this game. You watched him again in that Miami Dolphins game. A lot of inside zone, outside zone power. You get him going downhill. Had some big runs late in that game as Miami went on to kind of seal that victory.
Well, there's definitely a belief that with the combination of what they have inside with Grady Jarrett, who you and I both have always liked, but he is a lighter player. Yep. Now, obviously, Dontari Poe is not a lighter player, but with if you look at Jarrett and you look at the two stacked backers who will likely be Riley and Jones, there's a certain feeling that you attack that straight on downhill and you make those guys have to take on blocks because you don't want those guys to be able to play fast flow, pursue, be aggressive, and run. So I think you'll probably see the Eagles take that approach in the run game.
I think when you look in the trenches, you know, Jason Kelce versus Grady Jarrett, I went back and I watched the game last year. I thought Kelce handled himself very well in that game. Two guys that are a little bit undersized for their respective positions. Grady Jarrett has turned into a really nice player.
He's a good player.
He was a sixth-round pick out of Clemson. Has turned
well, you and I
really
thought
nice
he should have been drafted higher.
No question. I think he definitely should have been drafted. I don't. Did we necessarily see him as a nose tackle? I don't know that I necessarily
Well, but
saw
I
that.
Think that's not a fun. I think he plays both.
Yeah.
I think it depends on their fronts.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, they're a four D-line front, so it's basically a gap defense. So he'll play the one technique and the three technique depending on their front.
So going across the line here now, and you start to see some of these matchups. You mentioned when they're in nickel, it's very often Vic Beasley and Tack McKinley. When Beasley's on the field, it feels like most of his rushes come against the right tackle for the most part. But the other guys, you'll see McKinley rush from both sides.
Yep.
Derek Shelby runs from both sides. Adrian Claiborne, due to kind of his body type, is more of a right defensive end. So you'll see him over on that side against the left tackle. These are all matchups, I think, that are really big. McKinley, like you said, the guy just – is nonstop.
Made
a lot of high motor plays and tape that I watched. Claiborne versus Vitae. Claiborne, six sacks, was it, against Dallas earlier this season? You know, has been disruptive for the – really only has really one or two go-to moves, but Vitae's got to be ready for those go-to moves.
Yeah, and so much comes down to the timing of the Eagles' pass game. One of the things that they've struggled with, and of course it's always easy to put it all on Nick Foles, I do think at times he struggles in this area, but it's obviously not all him. But if you're going to run a quicker game pass offense, particularly if it's going to be in normal down and distance situations, then the ball's got to come out. And Nick and the entire pass offense has struggled a little bit in that area with sort of the timing within structure. And that's something they're going to have to be much better at this week against the Falcons.
Yeah, and when you look at this Falcons defense, I mean, very, very good in the red zone. You mentioned that they're not a huge blitz team in terms of you know, the sixth fewest blitzes from the way I charted it, only 11 sacks via the blitz. But they're going to come at you with a four-man rush. So what does that mean for Nick Foles going into this game? What is it that he can expect to see schematically? You talked about what you see on a coverage standpoint, but what are some of the plays, some of the throws that he's going to have to make if he was
well,
in this game?
Well, I mean, they're predominant, as we said, four-man rush.
Yep.
So the Eagles have a pass game that, for the most part, is a timing rhythm pass game where the ball needs to come out. There's not a lot of deep drops unless it's play action shot play. And we talk about those all the time. Oh, here's a good time for a shot play. But unless it's one of those plays, you don't see a lot of deeper drops with this offense. So the key really is to be able to, for Nick to hit that back foot, the ball's got to come out. And he struggled with that throughout his whole career at times. He can be a little deliberate. He can be a little measured. If he gets into that mode in this game, it'll be difficult because that's where I think this defense can cause a lot of problems. But if the ball can come out within timing, Fran, then that negates the pass rush. So that's really critical. So really what you're talking about here is the coaching staff has to create concepts, pass game concepts, you know, two-man combinations, three-man combinations, particularly against zone, that's where they're most effective, where the ball can come out. Obviously, if it's man coverage, then you have to feel like you're going to pick out a throw and you got to throw it.
Yep.
And you got to turn it loose. Nick is not a second reaction player. He's not anywhere near as good the longer he stays in the pocket. The longer he stays in the pocket, the less effective he is.
Sure.
So he has to play with a defined sense of timing and rhythm in this game within the structure of the pass offense.
I think one of the, just overall, whether it's run game, pass game, two things. One, you want to prey on that aggressiveness. You want to attack their aggression as a defense, especially in the front seven.
You'll see misdirection
concepts.
You're
going to see misdirection, screens and draws. Yep. You're going to try a lot of the backfield action stuff, whether it's split zone, you know, something as simple as the tight end coming across the formation can mess with a linebacker's keys. And
it's a
fast flow group like what you've got with Jones and Campbell. You're trying to, you know, get those guys flowing one way to hit the run back the other. I'm really anxious to see how the, because I thought last year the game plan against the Falcons was very, very good. You saw a lot of the split zone stuff. You saw a lot of the jet sweep action to go with a trap play and, you know, create some big plays in the run game with some of the backfield action. So very, very anxious to see how the Eagles choose to attack. And then, like you said, it's all about, you know, the ball's got to come out on time to be able to take advantage of those concepts that are called in the huddle. Anything else schematically, offensively, that you're kind of expecting in this game, or any other final thoughts before we transition to the other side of the ball?
No, I think we pretty much hit it. Here's my sense. I think that despite, and we'll get into the other side of the ball in a minute, but my comment sort of ties into that. I think the Eagles are going to feel pretty good about their defense against this offense right now. And this offense has not played real well. And we'll get into that momentarily. Which leads me to think that you might see the Eagles be a little conservative offensively to see how this game starts.
Yeah.
Now, a lot of people say, well, that's not in Doug's nature. But the last thing you want to do in a playoff game is have early turnovers. And, you know, I know that Doug likes to be aggressive. Andy Reid has always been that way in playoff games. You saw what Andy did, you know, this week against, even though they lost, what he did early to get the big lead against Tennessee. But I'm just wondering if they might be a little careful this week, because what the last thing you want to have happen here is all of a sudden it's middle of the first quarter and you're down 10-0 because you've turned the ball over.
I think it's one thing that kind of plays into the Eagles' hands a little bit too is that you look at a lot of the Falcons' wins over the last few weeks. They've been close victories. They've been, you know, some would say
they haven't scored a lot of points.
They haven't scored a lot of points. But the defense, I think, over the last 6 weeks, it's been 16 points a game.
Very, very well.
Has been very, very good. So, you know, you look at, you know, the way that the Eagles will want to win this game, it's going to be a 21-17. It's
more
be
than
a,
likely.
It's going to be a 20-13, and it's not going to be pretty.
No.
But I think that plays to it. And we might get some weather, you know, on Saturday night. It's going to be a fun matchup from that standpoint,
yeah,
for sure. But let's go to that other side of the football. And you mentioned the matchups. You know, I think that the Eagles will feel favorable going into this game with, especially up front. You know, you look at the defensive line against that Falcons offensive line. They have had, you know, an injury at left guard. Andy Levitre is out, so you've got Ben Garland in there, and then you've got Wes Schweitzer at right
who's
guard,
who's struggled all year.
Tell me about these guys, because I think we know, you know, Jake Matthews is a solid left tackle, not a star, but a solid
right
left tackle. Alex Mack, one of
good
the best
player
centers in the game, and then right tackle Ryan Schrader,
another guy,
nice player,
yeah,
but yeah,
yeah.
So, well, when you talk about those two guards, what
I mean, I think when you watch
there?
When you watch their pass game, which we can start with that, when you watch their pass game, I think it shows up every game that they struggle in pass protection one-on-one at the guard position. That's where it always shows up. And now that you have the backup at left guard in Garland and Schweitzer, who struggled all year, you know, I think that that's an area that the Eagles have to attack and can attack.
Yep.
And there's many ways to do that. We've talked about what are probably their two staple fronts when they line up in their sub package, whether it's nickel or dime, where they either line up with two wide nines and 2-3 techniques, or they line up with some kind of five across. But all of that is geared theoretically, to creating one-on-ones, particularly when they line up with the two wide nines and the 2-3 techniques, because that's normally Graham and Cox inside of the three techniques. And we've get into what we've talked about numerous times about how to how will the Falcons handle that.
Yeah, right.
You know, surprisingly, last week they slid their protection early in the game away from Aaron Donald.
And Donald wrecked the game.
And he had the one-on-ones. But the point is, whoever they slide their protection to, whether it's Cox or Graham, the other interior player, Cox or Graham, is going to get a one-on-one matchup on a guard.
You have to win the one-on-ones.
And I think the Eagles are going to feel pretty good about that.
Yeah. To me, Ike Reese brought up a great point on Eagles' game plan. It was 2 weeks ago. I want to say it was after the Oakland game. You know, when you look at guys like Fletcher Cox and Malcolm Jenkins, and when you say, like, you know, these guys are great players in Eagles history, the greatest players in Eagles history made their mark in the playoffs. You know, this is where the defense, to me, you take the next step. This has been a great defense all season long. Obviously, you had your bumps at certain points. But to me, you know, Fletcher Cox, this is a game where you're going to win your one-on-ones, and you've got to make your presence known.
In the past game, they have to win up front because say what you want, the Falcons have not scored anywhere near the points they did a year ago. Matt Ryan's only thrown 20 touchdowns compared to, I think, 37 last year. So the numbers are not there in the pass game, but the players are still there. So if Matt Ryan is going to get comfortable in the pocket without pressure, he's a pretty darn good professional quarterback, and they still have pretty good players. Now, I went back and took a look last year. The Eagles didn't do anything special with Julio Jones.
No, not at all.
They just played.
Yep.
Now, you know, again, that doesn't mean they won't this year because, you know, that's on tape. And
we've seen them do things with Odell Beckham, Antonio Brown, a lot of talent.
Right, so we don't know.
Yep.
But last year they did nothing special with Julio. They didn't match up anybody. They didn't necessarily roll coverage. They didn't double team him with dedicated doubles.
You saw Malcolm Jenkins one-on-one, Nolan Carroll, Jalen Mills, no question.
Yeah, they just played.
Yep.
They played their defense, and it worked out pretty well last year. But we'll see. But you know, obviously, Julio can wreck games and make big plays, and that's what you must prevent. My sense is, because they've not run the ball, the Falcons, the numbers are pretty good. To me, it's an odd mix because the tape doesn't reflect the numbers. They've had some games where they've run it really well, but I don't think they've run it consistently game to game as they did a year ago.
I think the volume is there, but the numbers aren't necessarily to the point where you're like, wow, this run game is probably special. You look at it, you know, yards per carry, they rank eighth in the league, 4.3 yards per carry. It's a good solid, you know, good number, but not to the level what they were top two.
Yeah, well, like I said, I think they've had some really good games, but not when you watch tape, and I've watched every Falcons game, not a point where I feel like consistently week to week that this is a really good run game. But again, good players, Freeman and Coleman. And believe me, there are some people in the league who think Coleman's a better back than Freeman.
Yeah.
I love Freeman, but, you know, I get that.
Yep.
But certainly they can be big factors, and you can't just, you know, let them get going.
And clearly they know their issues in pass protection because, you know, they played that game against the Rams last week. They ran the ball, 40 times in that game?
Well, the score also allowed them. And by the way, this game could well be the same kind of game.
Yeah, I mean, so to me, it's going to come down to, and something that the Eagles have done at a high level for 99.9% of the year is defend the run.
Right, and they'll have to do that.
It's going to be a big-time factor in this game.
Because it could be another volume run game. You know, look, last week the Falcons got ahead of the Rams. The game was always pretty close.
Yep.
I mean, it was 13-7 at the half. They never really pulled away. They made it kind of a two-score game, I guess, late in the third quarter, but that was – this game probably lines up to play out relatively the same way, so you would expect volume in the run game from the Falcons again. Last week, I think they only averaged 3.2 yards a rush, but there was a lot of volume.
Yeah, and so the staples there. And
outside
me if you
zone.
Think wrong. Outside zone, inside zone, you see the crack toss as with a lot. So you're going to see the linebackers for the Eagles, that if you're lined up on the edge, you got to be ready for those receivers come down and crack.
Oh, yeah.
Mohamed Sanu is one of the best I've seen in the NFL this year.
No, but you're right. It's outside zone, inside zone, and those pinpole concepts where they toss.
Yep.
And, I mean, you go back and you watch this because you said you went through. I remember a number of weeks ago against Tampa Bay, it might have been week 15 or 14, somewhere around there, they just ran outside all game, and the Bucs didn't do anything to stop it.
Yep.
So that was one of those games where the numbers really accumulated, but it was against a defense that's not very good.
Sure. And when you look at the transition of this passing game, last year They were the biggest big play offense in the NFL.
And they're not now.
They're not right now. The numbers in terms of downfield throws this year, they're 13th in terms of the quarterback rating, 86 quarterback rating. Last year was 133.1. You know, 9 touchdowns off big plays last year, just 4 this year. The numbers across the board in terms of the big play aren't there. That being said, you mentioned a Julio Jones.
They have players.
Mohamed Sanu. You know, Justin Hardy's a nice player. You know, all these guys. Austin Hooper.
I mean, Taylor Gabriel last year was a big factor who everybody spoke about. And he, I don't remember every single play this year. But last year he caught, not only did he catch tunnel screens and run 25, 30, 40 yards at times, but he caught downfield balls.
He beat the Eagles on an 80-yard touchdown on the stutter go.
Correct.
Yep.
Correct. And those plays have not happened this year.
Yeah. So the one thing that they do have going for them, though, is that they're the number one third down offense in the NFL.
Which is really odd to me watching the tape, but they are.
Yeah, it's interesting because I don't know what the numbers are in terms of passing versus running. I didn't go that deep into it, but seeing that they're the best third down offense and just watching them, you get a feel for all the different layers to it. You know, you see the fact that they're so good in the bunch. You know, that's so good with pre-snap motion and deciphering coverage early. They run empty. All
right.
The different personnel groups, multiple tight ends, multiple backs. A lot of different factors there that go into how efficient they are offensively.
Well, I'm glad you mentioned bunch because they're very good at that. And again, the Eagles, how much man the Eagles choose to play, I guess we'll find out. My guess is they'll play more zone. But the Falcons do like to line up in bunch, three-man bunch, and they're very, very effective with it.
Yeah,
and the other thing you have to keep in mind with this pass offense is Freeman and Coleman are excellent receivers.
Yes.
And not only are they offset in the backfield, but they can be detached from the formation.
Coleman, they put in the slot a lot. You know, and not just, they're going to run and throw a screen to
right,
him.
Right, right.
You know, I remember the Denver game last year was kind of like that game that everyone put up on a pedestal.
Well, that was a heavy man defense.
Right.
And I actually talked to Matt Ryan about that at the Maxwell dinner, and he said that they knew they were going to get a ton of man, and then that was a matchup they knew they could win.
Yeah,
now, the Eagles won't play that much man.
Of course. No, it's going to be interesting and just to see how the Eagles decide to match up because, honestly, you know, we've seen this over the last few years. That's been an area where you've seen the Eagles give up some big plays is to the running backs in coverage.
Right.
You know, do the Falcons come out in 20, 21 personnel and flex Tevin Coleman in the slot and see how the Eagles decide to match up? I think that'll be very interesting in this game. It seems like when they go with two back sets, the ball's going to Coleman. That's just me, though. It just seemed like
I don't know. I can't speak to that 100% either, but there's no question that those two backs are really effective in the pass game.
Any other big things here, Greg? I mean, there's a ton we've covered a lot in just under 25 minutes or just under 26 minutes. A lot of big factors in this game. It's going to be a really fun matchup to watch, especially I'm thankful it's not going to be single digits out there.
No.
It'll be in the 50s.
I'm thankful it's the early game Saturday, so I'm not fighting sleep in the fourth quarter.
Sure,
you know.
No, well, hopefully none of us are fighting sleep. It should be an exciting game. So excited to watch it with you here at the NovaCare Complex. Greg Cosell, appreciate the time here once again on the Eagle Eye in the Sky podcast. Great stuff from Greg, and you can follow him just like I do on Twitter, at Greg Cosell. And while you're at it, I'm at FDuffy3. That's where I post all of the podcasts I'm a part of and all of our X's and O's content that we produce here at PhiladelphiaEagles.com. And you know I greatly appreciate everybody that promotes this podcast on any and every social media channel. That is one way to support the show, but the other is to go into Apple Podcasts or Stitcher, give us a rating, and leave us a comment. I wanted to give a shout out to MT57, who rated the show and left a comment saying how much they enjoy the podcast on iTunes, as well as Shfu Yadel, who rated the show and left a question. And Shfu Yadel wants to know, who have been my favorite offensive and defensive players to watch this season, and how does their play compare to my preseason and midseason expectations? So I picked 3 players on both sides. On offense, Nelson Agholor, who obviously, you know, surpassed a year ago at this time. If you would have told me that Nelson Agholor was going to be this much of an impact player for the Eagles offense, I would not have believed you. And the fact that he has made the jump that he has, to me, has been one of the storylines of the 2017 season. Jason Kelce, you saw the flashes, especially around midseason last year, him start to kind of turn the corner in this offense. The Eagles coaching staff doing a good job of understanding what are the concepts that work well with them. You're seeing not just just the pin pull schemes and, you know, him getting up to the second level in zone runs, but also a lot of their draw plays where you see him get out to the second level. You see him as a puller. You see him in the screen game as well. So Jason Kelce, to me, has really kind of stood out to me as a player that I enjoy watching each and every week. I'm excited. Like I mentioned earlier with Greg, I'm excited to see him match up against Grady Jarrett on Saturday night. And then Brandon Brooks, his line mate, the guy right next to him. You know, Brandon Brooks to me has always been just a solid player, a solid right guard, one of the better starters in the league. This year, he's been one of the best offensive linemen that I've studied all season. He's been outstanding, very much deserving of his Pro Bowl berth. I'm going to be honest, I didn't necessarily expect that he was going to be named to the Pro Bowl, because typically with offensive linemen, you see that it's usually a couple years after they deserve it that they finally get voted in. So really happy for Brandon Brooks. He's a great guy. Every time I've ever met him and got a chance to talk to him, I've really enjoyed it. And watching him on film, you see a guy who's just smart, he's tough, he's nasty, he's technically sound. I've really enjoyed watching Brandon Brooks all season long. And then my favorite on defense, obviously Fletcher Cox to me is one of the best in the league at his position. I think he's a top two or three defensive tackle in the NFL. But Brandon Graham is a player that I love watching him each and every week. And he's just so much fun. I mentioned it earlier with Tack McKinley, the defensive end from Atlanta. The guy's just a ball of energy. That's Brandon Graham. You know, and he has just been outstanding week in and week out. And it might not always show up on the stat sheet, but making plays against the run from the backside as a pass rusher, he's just been outstanding all season long. Tim Jernigan, I know, has kind of fallen off a little bit because of this ankle injury. Hoping to see a big game from him in this week's game against Atlanta. But he's been so dominant and so physical at the point of attack in the run game. Has been disruptive at times as a pass rusher as well. I was a little bit worried when the team lost Benny Logan in free agency. But Tim Jernigan has come in and filled those shoes really well. And obviously has grown the shoe size up a couple sizes as well, just with his play. And then Jalen Mills. I know, you know, some people, you know, kind of give him a bad rap. I'm a big, big fan of Jalen Mills and the way that he plays the game. He's super physical, competitive, instinctive kid. I know he jumps a couple double moves here and there. That's going to happen, the corners. That's just a fact of life in today's NFL. I'm a big fan of Jalen Mills as a football player. You know, whether he's a corner, a slot, a safety, you know, down the road 5-6 years from now, I don't care. To me, he's going to be a starting player in this Eagles secondary for a long time. So I'm a big fan of Jalen Mills. So thanks to MT57, Shvuyavel, and all of you out there for your continued support of this show and all the rest of our podcast offerings on PhiladelphiaEagles.com. All right, let's keep the show going. I told you earlier that we would break down a player from this national title game, Georgia versus Alabama. Let's talk about Georgia running back Nick Chubb this week in our scouting report.
Dim those lights. We're headed to the film room for the scouting report.
All right, so Nick Chubb, 5'10 and a half, 228 pounds, a big physical kid, two-time first-team All-SEC. He was actually named the SEC Freshman of the Year back in 2014, ahead of some guy named Leonard Fournette, who obviously has turned into a really impressive first-year player for the Jacksonville Jaguars, was a great player for LSU at the college level. Three-year starter for the Bulldogs. It's his first year in offensive coordinator Jim Chaney's pro-style scheme. You know, started his career for Mark Richt in that pro-style offense, lined up in both one- and two-back sets. Really good feel for the variety of zone and gap run schemes in their offenses. And to me, his vision, his feel as a runner, that's the strength of his game. He's short with a thick frame, but he's built to handle the load as a running back. You know, he's a decent athlete, lateral quickness and agility to find running room in tight quarters. I think he's solid there, but his best trait in my eyes is his vision as a runner. He is both patient and decisive with the ball in his hands. He's got an innate feel for picking his way through trash and finding a crease in the defense. He's more than willing to do the dirty work between the tackles, and he's really good at finding cracks in tight spaces. Very competitive ball carrier, works to pick up every inch he can on every carry. He's a tough guy to bring down. Arm tackles alone aren't going to do it, and he's a strong runner with a low center of gravity that churns the butter through contact. His feet are always going. He takes care of the football. He hasn't put the ball on the ground once in 12 games that I've studied from him over his career. He's got deceptive speed in the open field for a bigger back especially, and he's a serviceable receiver in the screen game as well. Adequate pass protector. He's got to get a little bit better there, but a guy that I think gives good effort in that phase of the game. Now, 2015, tore his knee up, right? A couple ligaments that were torn there, missed the rest of that season. Didn't really seem like himself for a good chunk of 2016 as well. But I think with that, on top of the fact that he's not a truly dynamic athlete that's going to wow you with his burst or his speed in the open field, you know, that's the thing that people kind of question is he athletic enough? Is he explosive enough to be a full-time starter at the NFL level? You know, he looked a little bit more comfortable as the year went on last season, 2016, but was still not to his pre-injury form. He's not a guy that you're going to move around as a chess piece, not like his teammate Sony Michel, who puts the ball on the ground a little bit more than I would like to see in terms of his ball security. Doesn't project that kind of player in the NFL. He's not going to be a movable guy in terms of being moved around the formation. I think he'll be a nice third down option, not the kind of athlete that will need to be game planned for defensively. And he's more likely to try and run through you than shake you one-on-one. He doesn't have great wiggle as a ball carrier either. But overall, Nick Chubb, naturally instinctive runner, may have the best vision of any back in this class. He's tough. He's physical. He's well-rounded outside of a lower athletic ceiling that you'd like to see. I hope that, you know, that one of the things that I wrote down coming into the year was that I was really hopeful that he would return to pre-injury form. And for the most part, he looked like that this year. Now, Monday night, national title game, I think he averaged 1.4 yards a carry. I don't think he ran for more than 25, 30 yards in the game. A lot of people are going to kill him for that. You know what? Leonard Fournette didn't run for a lot of yards either against Alabama over his three-year career. That's turned out okay. That's a great NFL-style defense that he's going up against. Nick Chubb is one of the better running backs in this class. I still have faith that he can be a feature back, a primary ball carrier for an NFL offense. I'm a big fan of his game. So great stuff from Greg Cosell and all of you out there listening, whether you're on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, iHeartRadio, TuneIn, Spotify, Google Play, and of course on PhiladelphiaEagles.com and the Eagles mobile app. Thank you. And again, one last time, rate the show. Give us a few seconds. Leave us a comment. Leave a question. Don't be afraid to leave one on there, because I would love to answer it here on the podcast like I did for Shuyavel earlier in the show. All that being said, I think that'll do it. Another show in the books here on the Eagle Eye in the Sky podcast. For everybody here at the NovaCare Complex, I am Fran Duffy. We will talk to you next week.